You are listening to a Commonwealth Bank of Australia Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. This podcast provides general market-related information and is not intended to be an investment research report. The information contained in this podcast is based on previously published material, and before listening, you're advised to read the full Global Economic and Markets Research disclaimers, which can be found at combankresearch.com.au.
Welcome to the CommBank Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. My name is Belinda Allen and I'm a senior economist here at CommBank. And today I'm joined by Kim Mundy from our international economics team. Kim, good to have you on.
Hi, Belinda. Great to be here.
Now, we're going to talk about something that's on everyone's lips, but not the US election. We're going to talk about double dip global recession. Now, given we are seeing a second or even third wave in the Eurozone, in the UK and the US, I guess the prospects of another downturn in the global economy is lifting. But before we talk about the outlook, it would be great to get your thoughts on how the global economy performed over the third quarter.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what's really interesting about everything that's going on at the moment is that the economic recovery surpassed expectations in Q3. So we saw some very strong bounces in activity. For example, in the US, growth was up by 32% on a seasonally adjusted annualized rate. Eurozone economic growth surged by 12.7% in Q3. Now, those are huge numbers. And I guess the reason why we've seen such a sharp rebound in activity is that the lockdowns were lifted sooner than expected, and that just released a wave of pent-up demand. So many households had built up large cash buffers as a result of both forced savings, and that was, you know, where there were some things that you couldn't spend your money on even if you wanted to, and also the fact that there was strong income and welfare support from government. So far, we've bounced through Q3, but it is looking a lot more uncertain now around what will be happening from Q4 onwards.
The Q3 scenario sounds very similar to what we've seen here in Australia. So in Victoria, when the restrictions were eased, we did see a large amount of pent-up demand come through on consumer spending, particularly things like personal care, household goods and equipment, clothing, things that you really didn't want to buy online and you wanted to go out there and spend. Mm-hmm. So that situation sounds very familiar. What has not happened, though, that seems to be happening offshore is obviously the second and third wave and how that is my impact to the outlook. But that better performance in the third quarter, does that change your view on how deep the contraction was in 2020?
Yes, it does. I mean, we've pared back the depth of the recession for 2020. We now expect activity will fall by 2.5% this year, and previously we're expecting a 3.5% contraction. But I guess it's important to understand that a 2.5% fall in economic activity is still a very, very deep contraction. I mean, global GDP growth only fell by 0.1% during the financial crisis. It also means we expect 2021 growth will be a little bit stronger, and that's really just reflecting that better starting point. But given that the economic outlook has softened recently in a number of advanced economies, I guess that serves as a good reminder that, you know, we're battling a global health pandemic and we're not out of the woods just yet.
No, we are not. And I do want to ask you about what are the downside risks to your outlook? And obviously, front of mind and the number one risk has to be the path of the virus. How does that impact your outlook, and what other downside risks are evident out there at the moment?
Yeah, so the latest outbreaks across Europe, the UK and the US are actually their most severe COVID outbreaks to date. And, you know, as we've been saying over and over again, the economic outlook is inherently tied to the path of the virus. So it just means that we're still operating with a lot of uncertainty. But the fact that we've now seen both the Eurozone or countries in the Eurozone and the UK reinstate nationwide lockdowns to try and control the spread of the virus suggests that global economic growth will slow, and the risk is that it will fall again if more countries are forced to go down that path. One of the other risks that we're monitoring at the moment is the risk that governments end up tightening fiscal policy prematurely. By that we mean whether they reduce the amount of government spending or government support to parts of the economy. And at this stage, governments actually do look set to tighten fiscal policy quite substantially in 2021. So if they do that, that'll take away one of the key drivers of economic activity that's really helped the global economy not fall as far over 2020 as it would have otherwise.
And once again, you know, the similarities to Australia are just, you know, very, very high. We have seen the federal government here consistently extend the support programs for the Australian economy. So the latest was JobSeeker, which got extended to the end of March as well. So obviously they're cautious about pulling back on government assistance too early. Now, that was the downside risks. I kind of want to ask about the upside risks. Is there anything to be positive on in this scenario?
It's really nice to take a break and talk about something positive. And there are some upside risks. So as I mentioned earlier, households have amassed really large savings. And so those can be drawn down to help support spending levels. So that in itself is positive for the outlook. China's economic performance is also an upside risk. So its economic rebound has been particularly strong in part because of spillovers from advanced economies, household income subsidies and spending. So, and you know, also the infrastructure out spending there has been particularly strong as well. And then finally, we are starting to see some signs that labour markets are improving, and that will be a positive for consumption. But I guess we're still conscious that it will take a long time before labour markets fully recover their post-COVID shock. You know, as we've said on a podcast previously, unemployment rates go up the elevator and down the stairs. So we do still have some work to do on that front.
Now, with the prospects of a double-dip recession rising in the Eurozone and the UK, are there any prospects for further monetary easing? We know the Bank of England and the European Central Bank did a lot of support early on in the pandemic. But really, apart from that, they haven't, you know, done anything of late. Is there any prospect that they do more as we look into 2021?
Yes, we are expecting that they will both increase the amount of policy support, given that we are now looking at a double-dip recession in both of those areas. So we're expecting more asset purchases from the European Central Bank, as well as an extension to their pandemic emergency purchase program. So those should both be announced in December, in our view. We have recently, the Bank of England just raised its cap on asset purchases, but we also do see the risk that the Bank of England cuts its interest rate to -0.05% in the second quarter of next year. I mean, other central banks could ease policy too over 2021, but, you know, at this stage, what we do doubt is we doubt any central banks will be raising interest rates in 2021 or even in 2022.
That would be a massive surprise if that did happen. Now, in the final stages of our podcast, we're going to go around four different economies just to highlight some of the key outlooks and things that we should watch there. Now, we're not going to talk about the US, just given we're still
waiting for some clarity.
We are, and obviously that will impact the economic outlook there. So I want to start with China, and it's fair to say they've been a bright spot in the global economic recovery. What's the current view on China?
Yeah, we've upgraded both our 2020 and 2021 GDP forecasts. And infrastructure investment, as I said, that's been one of the driving forces of their economic recovery. We're expecting that to continue, but we also expect the services sector will start to accelerate as consumption recovers. One area that might begin to slow, though, is net export growth. And as I was talking about earlier, China's exports have benefited from household income subsidies in advanced economies, as well as the shift to working from home. I mean, most of us have bought at least something for our home office.
Yes.
But that will fade as income subsidies unwind. Nevertheless, the outlook for China remains robust, and they are by far going to outpace other countries that we monitor.
And what about Japan? They've got a new prime minister. Are we likely to see anything shift in the Japanese economic outlook?
no, we're really not expecting much change from Japan. And we actually, our forecasts are a little changed to reflect that. We're still expecting Japan will be about 4% below its pre-recession levels by the end of fiscal year 2022. There was a short rebound in consumption and business investment, but there's still a lot of uncertainty around the COVID situation in Japan and, you know, concerns about double-digit recessions in other major economies is really a key downside risk to Japan's export outlook.
Turning our attention to the Eurozone, and we have already touched on it a little bit, but obviously the prospects there for another recession are rising.
Yes, so we're now forecasting that economic activity will fall in Q4 2020, and we've also got a mild fall in Q1 2021. I think the risk is actually that we see a weaker rebound. So many of the lockdowns that have been implemented so far have been for 1 month.
Mm.
We just think it'll probably take a little bit longer to get infection rates under control, especially if you look at how long it took for Melbourne's lockdown to be lifted. And we also think that the effect on industries is going to be uneven, so that manufacturing activity will outperform versus the services sector. But, you know, given that many businesses and households are going to be entering into the second lockdown in a more vulnerable position, it's not boding well for the outlook there at the moment.
Okay, and finally, the UK. Obviously, they're entering another lockdown there. And another topic that really we could spend a whole lot of time talking about, Brexit.
Exactly. I mean, the outlook for the UK is very similar to the Eurozone. We're forecasting a pretty steep 11% decline in economic activity in 2020 and only a very mild bounce of 1.5% in 2021. And one of the things holding the UK economy back still is that it has Brexit to contend with on top of everything else. Trade negotiations between the EU and the UK are going down to the wire, and business investment is likely to remain muted when businesses don't know what shape the UK-EU trading relationship will take in 2021. So with all of that, you know, we're still expecting the UK will be about 7% smaller than it was pre-COVID by the end of 2022.
That's a big number. Kim, appreciate your insights as always.
Great to be here, as always.
Now, you can read Kim Mundy's report from the International Economics Team on Double Dip Global Recession, which was published on the 3rd of November on combankresearch.com.au.